Hello and welcome to the Christmas podcast of the Christmas issue of the Aldi magazine with me, Harry Mount, editor of the Aldi. Our cover for this issue is a fantastic cover, a piece by Bruce Fleming, who spent Christmas 67 with Jimi Hendrix, Turkey and All the Trimmings. So Bruce, if we could begin, how did you first meet Jimmy?
I got a call from Chaz Chandler, who was the bass player for the Animals band, and he had found this young man in America, very impressed by him, playing in a band in New York, and decided to bring him back to England because he felt he was so different and so original that he might be something that the British had never seen before. So he brought him back to England and rang me up and said to come around and meet this guy, I want some photographs done. And so I went round to the office and met this hilariously dressed guy with a big afro, and we shook hands, we sat down.
How was he dressed, Bruce?
I think he had bright green trousers and amazing shirt, lots of jewellery, a big hat, you know. He didn't have the hat on at the time I met him, but right. That's what he wore. And then we chatted for a while, and we got along, and then we arranged a session for early spring of 67.
And this was for the album cover?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Which was, well, are you being experienced?
Partly the album cover, but also some black and whites for publicity.
Right. And this is Are You Experienced, is that right?
That's the first album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so where did you shoot that?
In my studio. I had a studio in Great Newport Street. Right. Which I shared with the chap I told you about, David Block, the publicist, lovely man. And he had the front offices and I had the back studio, a huge studio at the back. On I think we're on the fourth floor.
And your piece, your lovely piece, had come across very strongly that he was an incredibly nice bloke, Jimmy, is that right?
He was, lovely guy.
What was his character like?
I mean, at the time, a lot of the stars were a pain in the arse, to be honest.
Right.
They're throwing things out of windows and running people over in their cars and getting absolutely trashed and trashing hotel rooms. But he wasn't like that. He's just very laid back, very, very polite. And I think he was just only interested in music. That was it. That was his entire life, music.
Playing a guitar the whole time, had it strapped
around
his neck.
Apparently, Chaz told me that even because he lived with Chaz in his flat, for a while until he found his own flat, and Chaz said that even when he got up in the morning and went to the toilet, he'd have the guitar around his neck and you could hear him strumming it.
Amazing.
You know, he'd have it on all the time.
And a kind of gentle, sensitive guy comes across us.
Very.
Obviously got on with him very well because at some stage, if you could tell us about how you invited him to spend Christmas with you.
Well, that was late in 67. I was shooting him for something. I can't quite remember what it was. But I said to him, what are you doing at Christmas? And he said, well, not a lot. I can't go to Seattle, where his home was originally, and see my family because I've got too many gigs right after Christmas. So he said, I said, what will you do? And he said, I'll go to a hotel. So I said, no, you won't. The hell with that. He said, you come spend some time with my family and friends. And he said, great. So that was how it started.
And where were you living at the time?
In that terrible flat in Gray's Inn Road.
For Christmas Day 1967, how many of you were there for lunch?
About 12, I think. My wife cooked a huge turkey.
Yeah, all the trimmings?
Yeah, we could hardly get it in the oven. It was enormous.
And who else? I think other musicians
Mike
were there?
Mike Smith and his girlfriend from the Dave Clark Five was another dear friend of mine. And other dear friends, but I can't remember who the hell was there.
Right.
I'm never so sorry, but that's the '60s for you.
Yeah,
you know.
Plenty of booze and drugs.
Oh my God, it went on till the next day.
Right.
He left about, I suppose, about 5 a.m, something like that.
Amazing. And in your brilliant piece, you talk about Jimmy being very keen on the wine Mateus Rosé.
Yes,
that right?
Yeah.
And he ordered ahead. Is that right? Well, he didn't order. He suggested.
He didn't suggest it. He was drinking it, and I said, you like that wine? He said, yeah, it's my favourite. So I thought, right, I'll get that in, make sure we got it in.
And so over lunch, you know, normal lunchtime, but lunch went on quite late, but then you went on drinking and chatting.
Well, the turkey was so big, it took a long time. I mean, he got there around, I think, about 11:30, 12, But we didn't eat till about 4 or 5
right.
because the turkey was so big.
Right.
We didn't realise how long it would take. And my wife was doing all the poking it and seeing if it was running clear and all that nonsense. And
yeah.
and it just took longer than we thought because it was about a 16-pounder, I think. It was huge.
Right.
Hardly get it in the oven.
And then, so well, that must have finished, what, 6-ish, 5-ish, 6-ish?
I have no idea.
Right.
We just ate and ate and drank and talked and laughed and that was it.
And that went on all night and, yeah.
Played music, you know.
And if we go back, and also Jimmy gave you a Christmas present, didn't he?
Well, no, we would, I can't remember what I gave him, but I gave him something. And he had some beads that I liked, some black beads, a long strand because he could get them over his afro.
Yeah.
And he gave them to me as a present. And also another set, which he wore around his wrist sometime, some coloured beads. I don't know, we used to swap bits and pieces like that, you know.
And what's happened to those beads now?
They're hanging on my camera that I shot him with, a Hasselblad camera.
Right.
On a tripod in the British Music Experience in Liverpool.
Right.
They've taken over the Cunard building. It's marvellous. You should get up and have a look.
I'll have to see it, yeah.
It's the entire history of British music. And Harvey Goldsmith organised it all. Another smashing guy. It's run by a chap called Kevin McManus, super guy as well, and it's apparently it's very successful.
And did you realise at the time how extraordinary Jimmy was? He wasn't as famous as he is now.
Yeah,
is that right?
we knew he was quite different. We knew it. Everybody knew it. And people, I mean, there were some great guitarists around, you know, some terrific guitarists. But there was a story that Eric Clapton heard him at the Scots of St. James. And Chaz apparently said that he went out and Eric was sitting on the pavement like this and he looked up at Chaz and he said, "You told me he was good. I didn't know he was that black good."
Really?
You know.
And he's much bigger over here than in America, is that right?
Yeah, he was doing, what I heard from Chaz and from history was that he was playing what they called the Chitlin circuit, which meant he'd play with Little Richard or any band. He was a pickup guitarist and would travel around with them. Apparently annoyed some people because he kept doing amazing solos, better than the other guitarists, which pissed them off, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I think he just wanted to go his own way, and he found it very difficult. And when Chaz said, "Why don't you come to England?" he thought, "Well, why not? Let's give it a go."
And when you shot him for that famous cover of Are You Experienced, he's wearing a huge cape, is that right? Was that,
did
you
arrived,
orchestrate it?
No, I didn't know what I was going to do. Photography for me is all may the force be with you. You know,
right.
I never arrange very much, to my detriment sometimes. But he arrived wearing this huge black cloak. And I thought, I don't know, Dracula and all that nonsense was popular at the time.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be fun if he just held the cloak up. And the boys were appearing underneath the cloak. It's a controversial album. Some people love it and some people don't.
Right.
I'm quite happy with it.
Well, pretty good one to have in your
But they chose the wrong one. They chose the wrong image because I shot from the ground, which was much more interesting. And that's the picture I'm selling as limited editions, that particular shot. The one they chose was more flat on, and I thought it was a little bit boring.
Right. But they were easy to get along with, all three members of the band.
Yeah.
And was Jimmy very much in charge of the other two, or how did it work?
I think he was. I think they were a bit in awe of him as well. Mitch was the drummer, and Noel Redding was the bass player.
Yeah.
And Noel was, I think Noel was very impressed with Jimmy. He was a damn good guitarist himself, but he was, I think people were impressed with him.
Clearly,
if he listened or did anything, you know, you listened and talked. I saw him once when He was talking to another guitarist, and he played left hand, and the guitarist was saying something, and Jimmy said, no, that's not what I mean, give me your guitar. Turned it upside down, because it was right hand, turned it to left hand, played it upside down, better than the guy could play himself. And we're all going, you know, look at this. And said, see what I mean? And
he's
a master.
There was a really lovely bit in your piece where you talk about he was a lovely guy, Jimi Hendrix, but basically 30% of his mind was always on music.
Yeah, I was the same. I was into photography.
Right.
I mean, I was absolutely obsessed with photography, and he was obsessed with music.
Yes.
And he knew me, and I knew him. you know, we knew we were both on the same plane.
Right, how fantastic.
That was another reason we got along, I think, because we were both so keen on our... And in a way, writing, photography, filmmaking, if you meet people like that who are involved, you know it, and you have a common bond with them immediately. And although they're in a different media, you have things to talk about because you're all struggling to be creative and find the right thing. In my case, the right image. In other people's case, the right words.
Right, and you get really, really good at it as well. As well as being obsessive, you become brilliant.
Well, I think, and Jimmy especially, I think if you do something for a long time and you become good at it, you're not doing it, you are it.
Yeah.
It's your DNA. I mean, I almost imagine you could pass that on to your children through your DNA, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. Because it's so nebulous as well, creativity is something, people talk about it all the time and they talk rot, but it's something that is so complex. And how you arrive at it, I've no idea. But well, I still don't know, and I'm 80 years old. But you arrive at it through just doing the thing and whatever you're doing and working hard at it.
And you also write in your piece about shooting Jimmy at Monterey, is that right?
Yeah.
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 And what was he like then in terms of the lineup? You talk about a very good interplay with The Who there.
I spent the whole 3 days there and covered the whole session, which was wonderful because it was the first big rock concert ever and there were so many people there. And the rock concerts are very expensive to go to now. It wasn't that expensive to go to this one, and people climbed in and the people who were running it didn't complain because they wanted to see music, let them see music. We had a much more laissez-faire attitude to things. You know, we weren't into money and it wasn't that important. It was what was going on. It was a revolution. We honestly thought we were going to change the world. We really did.
We sort of did, yeah.
Well, I think we have.
Yeah.
We have, except the bad guys are back in charge again. And now we've got wars again. Now we're trying to kill each other again. And we never seem to learn.
And at Monterey, that's the famous time Jimmy sets fire to his guitar, is that
right? That's right, yeah.
And that wasn't planned at all? You saw him at that
No, he didn't tell me, he didn't tell anybody, apparently. Maybe the boys knew in the band, but he was following The Who, and we knew The Who would do the destructive bit.
Yeah.
Keith Moon smashed his kit up, and I think it was kind of tricky for him to follow, he was worried. So he had to do something a bit hilarious to follow them. And I didn't know he was going to do that. When I saw him in backstage, he had the guitar on the floor and was painting it with black swirls, which was very pretty. It was a big white guitar. And we said, oh, nice, you know. But I have no idea what he was doing. But my wife was in the crowd, and I was on my chair shooting, and somebody tugged my trousers and said, your wife's being a bit molested back there. And so I got off my chair, went back, and found this very tall hippie who had probably had too much to smoke and had his arms around my wife, so I had to tell him to bugger off.
Yeah.
And by the time I turned round, bits of the guitar were flying through the air. I missed the whole thing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Still, you've got some pretty good shots you've just shown me, either side of that instant, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, right up to that instance. That was the end of his show then.
Right. Because then Access... Well, as well as being a friend of Jimmy's, but access to rock stars and famous people was much, much easier, is that right?
Yes,
no bodyguards or anything?
No. Yeah. Now, sadly, I tried to get in to see Gary Clark. I don't know if you've seen him.
I haven't, no.
That was fantastic. I think he's another Hendrix.
Seriously?
Gary Clark Jr. He's about 35, black, got a little beard, good-looking guy, but a fantastic player, a blues player, but who does all kinds of things with it. And loves Hendrix, and I wanted to get in to see him. Now, I'm with Getty, and Getty are quite powerful, and they got onto the management. We were refused.
Amazing.
And I just wanted to go in for part of the session. But now, if you go in, the management vet you tremendously, and if you're with a great big magazine and they want to be in that magazine, they'll let you in, but other than that, you can't get in at all. So freelancers or people who just love to take photographs. No, it's out now. And
we'll ask for copy approval of your photos as well, will they?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's very kills off art. Yeah,
it's killed everything, and it's the way it is now. The managers have taken control of everything. Probably they see money in photography as well, you know, the photographs of the band, so they control everything tightly, which is silly, but they're doing it.
So we're talking about how digitalization has messed things up.
Yes, it has in a way. I mean, it's wonderful. The advances are wonderful. I could explain all sorts of technical things about photography where it's really, really quite remarkable. But there's a thing called a delete button on the back of the camera. And I'm afraid that we'll delete our history. That's my fear. And in the music business, I think copyrights are gone to hell. You've got to play live now to make any money or to be known. You must play live. And then maybe you sell your CDs. The record companies are in chaos.
Yeah.
Because they're not selling what they used to. You can download stuff now from your internet. It's all changed. You can't sell records anymore. CDs, I think, will go out of fashion completely.
Yeah.
And everything will be streamed, and you'll put it on your iPod. So, in a way, it's good and it's bad.
And did you realise at the time, I think people often don't, that you were in a golden age then?
No.
Didn't.
No, I was just having a bloody good time.
How fantastic.
No. I knew something was happening because we'd just come out of the war, and I went through that as well, bombed and whatever, you know. And
you were in London, were you?
Yeah, yeah, at Twickenham.
Yeah.
But we were bombed a lot, and my mother sent me down to the country with all the other kids. For about a year, 1940, I think that was, because the bombing was so severe. Then when I got back, the doodlebug started, so I used to see four or five. We came out of the war, and it was so miserable. Everybody was broke. There was food rationing right until the 50s. And now you had all the young people coming up, like myself. We wanted something else. So we had pop music and things, but it was kind of dull and boring. And then suddenly this guy called Bill Haley came over. And that just started everything off. And then every kid wanted to buy a guitar. I just wanted to buy more cameras, personally.
But as you said, you're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, exactly the right place at the right time. Yeah. And also, as my father was a musician, quite a well-known one in the 30s, played with all the great bands.
Really, what was he called?
Jock Fleming. He was a trombone player, and he played with the Savoy Orpheans and men of the Buffalo Band and many of the big bands in the 30s and 40s. In fact, during the war, he was in the artillery and the BEF, and when they came back, they brought him back and said, it's better you to entertain the troops because you're wasted as a gunner. So he was brought back to play for the troops.
Right. How funny. In fact, by coincidence, in the same issue you're in, we got an interview with Vera Lynn.
Really?
That's a good link, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And so I know you don't want to dwell on Jimmy's death, but you told me that he was basically exhausted. Is that right?
I think that was the problem. We were all stunned.
Yeah,
he was exhausted, and they'd had a bit too much to drink and whatever. And I think the story is he lay down because he was tired and vomited in his sleep and choked to death, which was terrible, you know, absolutely terrible. You know, we none of us could believe it, but it happened.
And you were clearly such good friends with him. I think you told me you still miss him.
I do. I miss him. Yeah, he was a great guy.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Now I'm here with Annabelle Sampson, the digital editor of The Oldie. Have you got any questions for Bruce?
Talk about, in the piece, about quite anarchic, setting fire to guitars and the pot. And then obviously Harry starts to bond, Jimmy being part of the 27 Club, the famous age that people have died. Amy Winehouse more recently, but Jim Morrison, obviously Jimmy. Do you feel that all the good times that so delighted to have been part of, that you were born as part of this golden age, do you feel that it was at Jimmy's detriment? He died early because he was just having such a good time, whereas if he abided by today's more rigid rules, perhaps, you know, clean eating, living a more healthy lifestyle,
I'm sure he would have survived. I mean, I barely survived. I've still got some serious problems in my heart because I over imbibed herbs and things. The way it was, you know, it was a crazy time. I was brought up as a middle-class boy. I went to boarding school, and when I came out at 15, I was working in the newspapers. But the attitude of the English people generally, or the upper class, was that you will get a job, you will marry, you will have 2.2 children, you will do... And we didn't want to do this. We wanted to free up. And in America, we didn't want to know about it. We wanted to change things. We wanted to change the world. We didn't want another war. And then right after that, Vietnam. And we were down on that. And then we got sick of this. And then on top of that, the upper class had sort of dumped their responsibilities, I think, and gone off with their money and their bank accounts in the Bahamas. You didn't feel that you were looked after anymore by the upper class, the hierarchy. And so why bother with them? I'd play guitar and it just took off. So we felt we had our own momentum. We didn't need all that. We didn't need to be told what to do.
And life was all the better for it.
Well, Pink Floyd wrote a wonderful song, Another Brick in the Wall, you know.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, that's what you are, basically, another brick in the bloody wall for somebody else's benefit. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to free up. And we thought we'd change things. We really thought we were on the way. Walking down the street, and Tariq Ali was walking towards me. And we just looked at each other and smiled.
You knew him as an old friend, was he?
No, he wasn't a friend, but he was a very influential person. Sure. Influential. And we listened to people like that, you know. There were all kinds of people. I'm trying to think of their names, but we read The Doors of Perception. We tried to understand that there was another world beyond the one we were told about. And with drugs, we could get into that. That was our belief. Got a bit out of hand, I'm afraid, about time in Hyde Ashbury in San Francisco. And it was really getting a little out of hand then.
You were there, in fact, when Charles Manson's just died. Yeah. During those years, were you?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was mostly in Los Angeles.
Right.
So all through the 60s, I was there. Right. Yeah.
You had a great friendship with Jimmy, and you photographed him a few times.
Yeah.
How did he change in front of the camera? Was it a very natural...
He didn't like posing. He just liked to relax, and he liked to relax pose. None of this, you know, sort of showbiz, big smile, you know. Bob Monkhouse or something. It wasn't,
yeah.
That wasn't his scene, you know.
Yeah.
He was very laid back, and that's so you respected that, and that's how you photographed him.
Yeah.
And he was fine with that, you know. But of course he'd pose, he'd be with the boys and knew he had to get shots for publicity. But as for doing all the razzmatazz, no, it wasn't him at all.
Can you imagine him as an 80-year-old? Or do you think that he was meant to be eternally young?
I have no idea, but wow, wouldn't it have been amazing to see how far he could go? He had new bands, you know, he had the Band of Gypsies, and he was trying different things out. And if he had survived, I think he would have gone on to make even better music. Because he was so committed, you know, there's musicians around now that I absolutely adore. Led Zeppelin was my favourite band. I regret that I never went to see them and asked them to could I be their photographer? I regret that. But if you watch Celebration Day, Led Zeppelin and Kashmir, try and watch that. That was when they played, I think, at the O2 in 2007. It's amazing.
So still got it.
Yeah, they've still got it. Yeah. You know, they've still got it. Yeah, absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you so much to Bruce Fleming for a fantastic oldie podcast and also for a terrific cover piece for the oldie Christmas issue.
Well, thank you very much. And don't forget to let people know that there are limited edition prints for sale. They ain't cheap, but they are unique. And thanks for everything.